Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. We'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. I want to thank you guys for taking time out to join us this evening. Whether you're listening to us live or you're listening to us on a download, we definitely appreciate you coming in and checking us out. Lots of new developments coming up this week. We got an excellent show lined up for you guys tonight. Want to have like a little bit of a carrier roundtable. If you'd like to get involved in the discussion, and participation is always welcome. All you have to do is press the number one. That puts you in the queue, and we'll try to get you up and get you involved as quickly as we possibly can. Without any further ado, coming in from tonight's trend lines report, we're showing that the price of diesel fuel is got a creeping incremental crawl upwards, creeping up by 0.3 percentage points, showing the national average price for diesel fuel sitting at $3.27 per gallon nationally. Capacity loosens ahead of the traditional July 4th peak. It's not unusual for spot rates to dip right after the frantic freight push leading into Memorial Day and then take off again as shippers gear up for the July 4th celebrations. Such has been the case recently, with spot rates for all three equipment types finding some resistance to go much higher than the current record levels. So let's take a look and see how each segment was performing here over the previous week, starting out with dry vans. We're showing that coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States, we have outbound spot market rates averaging for dry vans at $2.31 per mile. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion of the United States, outbound spot market rates are averaging $2.77 per mile. And coming out of the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.80 per mile. Moving down to the south central region of the United States, outbound spot market rates for dry van is coming in at $2.49. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing average outbound spot market rates for dry vans at $2.79. Shifting over to the skateboard or flatbed portion of the report, coming out of the northeastern corridor, we're showing average outbound spot market rates at $2.93. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing average outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $3.46 per mile on average. That leaves the nation. Moving up into the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate at $3.38 per mile. Moving down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for flatbeds at $3.05. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, showing that average outbound spot market rate at $2.68. Changing gears, going over to the temperature control or the reefer portion of the report. Coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for reefers at $2.47. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing average outbound rates at $3 per mile, $3 even per mile. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate at $3.18 for reefers. Moving down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing an average outbound rate at $2.94. And leading the nation, coming out of the West Coast right now, we're showing average outbound spot market rates for reefers at $3.36. And that, ladies and gentlemen, will wrap up this week's trend lines report. And with that being said, and without any further ado, let me go and grab my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're doing well. How are you, Rico?
I tell you, I really can't complain. Things have been quite steady on my end. Stuff has been picking up, but really, kind of, you know, it's kind of getting a little bit boring starting to work out, was having some problems with the truck earlier this year, but starting to kind of smooth out. Let me knock on wood as I say that.
I hear you.
And things are just starting to kind of just get to a real I'm almost scared to say autopilot kind of thing, because fortunately, you know, we've got our customers kind of things have just kind of been steady, and there's been no real hiccups in operations, and you know, just real smooth sailing right now. Kind of got me a little scared as I'm saying it.
The good thing, Rico, is you're positioned in the food industry, pretty much all you do. And no matter what, good or bad, people are going to eat. And a brother-in-law of mine that was in the grocery industry said, you know, the big difference, when things are really good, people eat steak. And when things are real bad, they eat pasta and they'll eat some hamburger. But they still got to eat. And there's a company up here in Canada, and I remember one of the owners, a company called Zavitz. It's actually a family that has various trucking enterprises. I remember one of the older Zavitz brothers said, you know what, we position ourselves in food because people always have to eat. And it's true. As long as you're carrying food, you'll always have work. And you know, with no further ado, let's have Ted Johnson from Elite. I don't know, has UD Prasad called in yet from SK Cornerstone? Good friend of mine.
We may have him here. Let me check the other line, but we may have him here in just a second. But we've got Ted Johnson up and on board with us.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Ted. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be here.
Always good to have you. And you know, you're pardon my language, you're always full of piss and vinegar, and you've got great ideas, and you've got a solid work ethic, and I think you're well on your way to building a great business.
Thank you. Yeah, just you gotta step up to the plate, and eventually you'll hit a home run once in a while. At least get on base.
You got it. You know what? It's you have to just keep trying, and you get there. And if you know, like you've been running flatbed for a long time, and now you're venturing into reefer, and I think I just got a message from our other guests. Where Ted, you're the only guy that showed up to the round table tonight, so we got you all. Rico and
no,
I
we
have
got,
you.
No, no, I just got off the phone. Just got Darryl. Darryl's up and on board with us too, but I got him in the green room right now.
What a pleasant surprise! So that's the same crew we had last time, which is great because both these guys are full of piss and vinegar. They're both young, and they've got, you know what, they've got great ideas. And they're building great businesses. This is the sort of, you know, I've been in this business a long time, but it's so nice to see the next generation doing what these guys are doing. And they're, you know, as the young generation says, they're rocking it. They really are. They're doing a great job building businesses in different parts of the continent. Our friend Daryl from Durango. Daryl, you on the line now?
Let me grab him real quick. There he is.
Okay.
Darryl, good evening, gentlemen. Sorry I'm late.
Yeah, welcome to. No problem. Welcome to the show. Glad you could make it, bud. I was just talking about you here, and you built a great business, you know, running from Ontario, Canada, into the Pacific Northwest. And our friend Ted Johnson from Nebraska has been building a flatbed business, and now he's venturing into the reefer market, which is kind of a natural in Nebraska because of the size of the beef industry there. Ted has just wet his feet. Ted, what are you up to now in reefers? Two reefers, two flatbeds?
I am up to 4 reefers today. Just brought my 4th one home, and I have 1 flatbed.
Whoa.
And
wow.
Yep,
that is great news. Good. Glad to hear it. So, Ted, this is new to you. What are you finding with the reefer end of things that really is interesting to you?
So the protein complex, slaughterhouses for cattle, hogs, and poultry, everybody seems to be making money in those industries. So especially the beef packers, those are kind of close and near my heart. Because I grew up around cattle, I got family in the cattle business. And so when the slaughterhouses with cattle, when they're making money per head, they want to keep killing cattle, keep slaughtering cattle, because if they're making a profit, that's what they want to do. They want to slaughter another animal. So there are just an abundance of beef loads in the beef patch here in Nebraska as far as that goes. That's what I'm finding, is that these beef houses are working at full capacity around the clock.
So, okay. Now, are you competing there with big carriers, with any of the mega carriers?
So the beef house that I focused on, I am not competing with any mega carriers. It is just all small truck fleet guys.
And are these guys you're competing with, have they built their businesses around that particular slaughterhouse?
Yep. As far as I know, from what I'm seeing, they have. I think some of the companies some of these smaller fleets that have been around just are losing energy. They're not performing the way they should be. So that's kind of how I got my foot in the door. They just plan up told me during our meeting before I started hauling for them, they just need somebody that's got the energy, the desire, the will to do this. And they want somebody long term. And there's just not a lot of guys that I know that are 27 and stepping into this arena, because we kind of lose the young guys between the time they leave high school and the time they can leave the state to go trucking with their CDLs. We're kind of losing a large amount of people there. So it's just there. If you step up to the plate and swing, you can get these deals.
Oh, that's great. And how are you making out with backhauls?
So I picked a lane with this customer, and I found out very quick that the freight broker thing wasn't really going to work out for me. So I just stepped up to that plate again and started swinging, and I hit another direct customer on the other end of this. And now I'm going direct both ways. I'm going north direct, and I'm coming back south direct. So it's working out well, a lot better than I thought, but everything's busy. So people are looking for good, trustworthy carriers. And the customer that I just gained on the north end of things, you know, she told me, she's like, if I can just find somebody who's willing to work, you know, that was her thing.
You know, I have to tell you, there seems to be, and not about our business, okay, because I don't find that in either the trucking or logistics industry. I find that people are in it, for the most part, are really, they're willing to work. But I find with everything else, it doesn't matter whether you need to get repairs done on your home, repairs done on your vehicle. It's just everybody has got this laissez-faire attitude, and it's prevalent, and there's going to be a shakeup somewhere, because people can't have these lousy customer service attitudes forever. You know, it'll run out on them, and there will be more, Daryl Rutherfords, and there'll be more Ted Johnsons coming down the pike in other industries that are going to eat people's lunches. And that's what happens. I think what happens is people get very comfortable, and then they're not looking, and somebody just comes and eats their lunch. And that's what both of you guys have done. Daryl, look at what you've built in a few years. How many trucks are you up to now?
18 and one street truck, so 19 total.
Wow.
And it's been a fight every step of the way.
And it's always a fight.
Yeah, and that's what I like. It's a challenge.
Yeah, it is. Now, Ted, you're all owner-operator pretty much, right?
What was that?
Ted, you're pretty much owner-operators?
Yep, that's the model I'm focusing on, is owner-operators.
And Daryl, you have then owner-operators switching over to company, or what are you doing?
So I still have owner-operators, lease operators, and I've started to put company on. The owner-operator market is starting to get harder with a small fleet. If I can get probably to 50 trucks, I'll get more owner-operators on. The conversation I have is, well, you're still too small. You know, they're nervous because there's been a lot of people that get going and do it the wrong way, and, you know, the industry has their bad characters. Lease operators are doing pretty good, but I think I'm coming to an end of that. I've helped a few guys get trucks, and I have a really good program, and, you know, it's working, but I think I'm going to go company just because I think I'll have better luck getting company, because a lot of owner-operators have had difficulty in the last years. A lot of them have ended up bankrupt, and I can slip fleet the trucks. So I can offer them more of a lifestyle where, you know, a guy comes in, takes a week off, I send the truck a little shorter, then send it west again. So I'm looking to get into some shorter lanes, but, you know, I'm going company because I just think the owner-operator issue is in Canada is getting harder and harder and coming to an end because it's so many bad carriers, guys just have lost their shirts. And what the problem is there is also the owner-operators don't seem to understand how important it is to understand their numbers. So 100%. They're failing. Yeah.
I totally. The other thing I find with owner-operators, and we're mostly a owner-operator fleet, but one of the things I find when we're talking to ones that want to join us, the first question they'll ask is, how much do you pay? Well, you know, I said it before, that should be the last question, because there's a lot of people out there offering a whole lot more money than we are, but don't have any fleet. So what's
correct.
The good of taking, signing a contract where you're getting $2 a mile and they're paying for everything, but they don't give you any miles, and you sit home for 3 weeks at a time? What's the point of that? You're better off to take less money, but deal with somebody that has their own customers and has steady runs. You know, we were talking to a guy today, and he said, you know what, the reason I've decided to join this company is because you're not open board. You know, I can all of a sudden, after 40 years of being in this business, I can have a life. I can tell my wife that I'm leaving and I'm going to North Carolina, and I'll be back on, you know, I'll be back on Friday morning, and we go up to her sister's trailer for the weekend. I can do that all of a sudden. And that never happened before, because I've been running open board, and I would get to, you know, I could get to Cincinnati and they would send me to Vancouver. And there's no way I could plan for that. So I think that's one of the big things. The one thing I have to say, and Ted, I'll give you something I learned in the last 10 or 15 years. I had leased a terminal at one point from a company called Central Transport. And the guys that have the yellow trucks, they do a lot of LTL. And I remember the one division they had in there prior to us going in had been an owner-operator division. And then a couple of years later, I was talking to one of their vice presidents, actually, and he said, you know, we were talking, and I said, so mentioned something about owner-operators. He said, we got rid of every one of them. I said, why would you do that? And he said, well, those guys were getting 5.5 miles per gallon. And we've specced out trucks that'll get well over 7.5 miles per gallon. That's why. Our operating cost is less than theirs. You know, which makes a lot of sense. As Daryl, as to your idea with slip seating, my experience with that has been the biggest one is guys don't want to, you know, there's a real huge apprehension, and I imagine it's even worse now with COVID. They don't want to share their bunks with anybody, you know, never mind at the same time, but they don't want to share their trucks and everything. And I think the only way around that is to have a cleaning team that disinfects in between people.
That's exactly what our plan is. And we even have mattresses dedicated. We have mattresses bags. So when the guy comes in, takes his stuff out, the mattress comes out, goes in a bag. The other gentleman's mattress goes back in, comes out of the bag.
Great idea.
So I'm kind of trying to follow J.R. Hall. They've been very successful in their enterprises.
Right.
And they do a lot of slip seating. It's a scheduling nightmare. And because you have to schedule the right truck coming in to go back out, so
right.
It's back so the guy doesn't lose his miles, right?
Right.
Some people may not know, I've developed my business plan on a system to guarantee guys home time. So they have a choice. The owner-operators have a choice. They have to do 3 trips. They usually get, 36 to 48 hours off. But after the
right.
third trip, they can have 9 days off. And I built my business plan so that I can profit that way, so they can profit. Now, if they decide to do a 4th trip, we use agents out west that the owner-operators have to pay for. I give them 30% back because it's lowering my cost and increasing my profit because
right.
I'm getting that extra trip. What I usually say to owner-operators, because I have the same thing, guys ask what you pay. And I look at them and I say, well, what's your expenses? What's your profit margin? How much profit do you want to make per mile? And if they can't answer, I know that they're not going to come to me. The guys who have an idea somewhat to say, after I pay myself, I want to profit 15 cents a mile, then I can take the conversation further. But exactly, the first thing anyone asks is, what do you pay and where do you run?
Right.
They don't. I could pay $10 million a mile, but you only get a half a mile a week, right?
Right.
Like they
yeah,
just
exactly.
don't have the concept of what it takes. And I spend a lot of time with my guys talking about accounting. I have some that it's a waste of time. I don't talk anymore. But there's some that have a problem. And my rule of thumb is make an appointment after 5:30 when you're home. And as long as I don't have something pressing, and I'll actually come into the office and we'll sit down and I'll help them with accounting and get them on a program. I actually recommend Profit Gauges from Kevin Rutherford because it's a very easy program to learn and guys can get a very good report to get their miles and their money, what they're making and what their costs are.
Sure.
So
great idea.
There's a lot more more personal involvement and caring. The days of the old trucking companies that sit in the office and the bosses are gone at 2 and, doesn't
help. No, those days were.
They're gone.
You know what? Those days are over. Your team has to respect you as a company and they need to respect your management. And you know right away by turnover, whether you're doing it right or doing it wrong. And if you've got huge turnover, you've got a problem somewhere. Usually it relates back to culture. Now, Ted, I've got to ask you, are you on a percentage basis with
yes,
your guys,
percentage.
If you don't mind me asking your mileage?
Yep, percentage.
Okay. And you're providing a trailer? Is that how it works?
Correct. Really? And they can bring their own. If they approach me and they already have their own trailer, we will make it work if they want to come here. But I'm trying to set it up to where they just bring their truck here and I provide the trailer. That way I got the trailer pool and everything going accordingly.
Yeah, I think you're smart. We only have a couple of guys with their own trailers that are on percentage, and we really don't want them because it's difficult with trailer pools and things like that. It's just too hard to manage. It's just, if that's your business, and there's some companies out there where everything is live load, live unload, then you're really, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I know some people up here in Canada, especially, that have trucking businesses like that, and, especially with produce, and everybody does well. The owner-operators do fantastic, and the company does well, but everything's live load. So it's really a brokerage service that offers insurance, being able to sell fleet, like a fleet policy. Ted, have you been able to talk to your insurance company where they want you to become a fleet so you can get that insurance cost down?
So So I told them that I'm going to be growing, and I told them, you know, by year's end, I want to be at least at 10 trucks. You know, that's my goal.
Right.
And I just told them, you know, maybe my policy renews in August, so I just mentioned, you know, maybe I should put, like, an umbrella liability policy in place. And we've discussed different options as I grow that maybe I should take in, put in extra protection as I'm sticking my neck out there a little further. And so I've not kept them in the dark about anything that I'm doing, and so far they've, you know, always responded positively.
Well, yeah. You can't, you know, and if I can warn everybody, you cannot lie to your insurance company. Don't ever do it, because what happens if you lie to your insurance company and they find out you've lied, you have lost all your credibility. And once you lose that, it's gone. It's, you know what, there's nothing left of the relationship. So they're depending on you to be honest. And if you've got, you know, it depends on what your policy stipulates, but if you tell the insurance company that I only hire people that have, you know, 3 years experience, then if you're going to go outside that, you're going to hire a guy or a girl that's got 1 year experience, come clean with the insurance company. Make a call. And you know what? I've made those calls before, and just to get their feeling on it. And they said, fine, thanks for telling us. You know, you're at least it's documented. You're not pulling anything over somebody's eyes. So,
right.
Yeah, just tell them your growth plans. They are your partner. And I know sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, it really doesn't feel it, but your insurance company is. And, you know, try operating without insurance. You won't go very far. And customers are getting smarter, and they're knowing, you know, they're you know, especially the larger companies, the shippers, the better brokers, they're looking to see how you're insured, and they want to know who the you know, whose insurance this is, and that insurance company's rating. That's really important. And if you've got a policy from a let's just call it a subpar insurance company, don't do it, because you don't really have insurance, and there won't be very many good direct customers that you're going to get. And I'm sure those, you know, those big slaughterhouses aren't going to load somebody that has lousy insurance. You know, same as the good brokers.
We had a conversation about that with the beef packer, and they, I had insurance set at 100,000, I think, cargo, but then as the commodity prices started to increase, I increased it to 150,000. But then when I picked up the beef packer, they said that they require 250,000 in cargo, because their beef products are high-end stuff. You know, they cut the order, so they get an order right that day, and then the beef is fresh. And, so, yeah, we had to increase the cargo for that and had that conversation with them. So they're paying attention.
Yeah, and let me ask you, what did that cost you to buy that much extra insurance?
It wasn't that much. It was just a couple hundred dollars per year more, because I have such a clean record. I don't have any claims. So, it didn't like double by any means. It was just a couple more hundred dollars. I was surprised how much did it cost. But, you know, that's subject to change if there was ever an issue. But so far,
Of course. You know, and if it's a small claim, you know, I was talking to Daryl here last week, and he's of the same opinion that I am. If any small claims, just pay them out of your pocket.
Right.
It's
pay now or pay later.
Yeah. It's cheaper to pay now.
Yeah.
Well, because you never know. You know what? You want to keep that. You want to keep that loss run, you know, to nothing, you know, so that you get the best insurance rate, or they give you a rebate, whatever. You know, you just don't want to use that insurance. Now, Ted, in your operation with owner-operators, how does it work in the U.S. as far as them being covered for workers' safety. What are the laws in Nebraska?
As like a workers' comp type situation,
yeah.
Or so.
Yes, do you have to cover it as a carrier, or do you have to make sure they have it? How does that work down there?
I know I have medical payment on my insurance, so if they get hurt on the job, my insurance will pay up to $20,000 per injury.
Right.
And if I hired a driver to drive, then I'm in that workers' comp situation. And I know the state of Nebraska requires workers' comp and stuff. That gets pretty pricey.
Right.
I haven't looked
into
it.
So what happens? Let me ask you a question. What happens if, God forbid, with an owner-operator in Nebraska, he owns the truck, the power unit, and God forbid, he gets hurt on the job badly, he can never work again. Can they come against Elite at all?
That's a good question. I should ask my agent to see how that scenario would play out, to see if I'm covered with that. I'm not sure.
You know, those are the things you have, like I call those bear traps. And we have to know those things because you don't want to find out when it's too late. I can tell you in Ontario how it works is if you have owner-operators, they can either get workman's compensation, which is huge. It's like a fortune because it's a percentage of their earnings. And that includes, if a driver, an owner-operator is making $1.75 per mile, it's a percentage of $1.75. So it could work out to be as much as, 10 cents a mile easily. So what we're allowed to do, as long as we have it, they're allowed to opt out of that and buy a private plan. And some of these private plans for very little money are actually much better coverage than what the government offers, because some of the private plans cover if, God forbid, a driver has an appendicitis attack. There's those policies, as well as if he falls off the truck or, God forbid, he's involved in the crash. But that's food for thought. Darrell, what do you do with your lease operators?
They register the same as an owner-operator. They file for their 1149A. We get that in place, and they're on the same NAL policy that my owner-operators are. I have an owner-operator NAL, and I have a company guy NAL.
Right.
It's like $96 a month to have their truck payment paid and $2,500 of income. Super cheap.
Yeah, and that's got some – does that have a long-term disability clause as well?
It has a long-term disability for the $2,500, not the truck payment. The truck payment's only a year. The $2,500 is long-term to like 65. And at 65, they lose the long-term disability.
Right. And you know what? There are, there's all sorts of different plans. You can up them and you can, insurance is just like anything else. You can buy the Volkswagen plan or the Rolls-Royce plan. And you got to figure out what works for you and for your guys. But, the last thing you want is somebody on your watch not be covered.
It's actually mandatory in my policy book due to the fact that it covers – it reduces my insurance liability on the accident benefits because it also has out-of-province coverage. So if they get injured, the health care is taken. So you have to make sure you understand what your accident benefits on your insurance are. And when you have a plan like we have – the insurance understands that I'm trying to lower their risk. So that's how you get better premiums, by lowering the insurance's risk.
Right, of course. And that's, that's what it's all about. That's they're in the risk management business. And, it's like I think I said on the show a few weeks ago, our insurance company is mandating that we put cameras in every truck, even though we have them in most. Now the insurance company is saying, not only do we want cameras, but we want Samsara cameras because that's the brand that we've chosen. for all our clients. So they're starting to, you know, it's taken the insurance industry years to figure out technology for their customers. But they're working on it pretty quickly.
I want to circle back around real quickly. Just want to get the guys' input on right now. We were talking a little bit before the show, but right now, going out and maybe encouraging some of our listeners again to maybe take another bite of the apple on trying to go and achieve and get themselves some direct customers. And right now, in this current climate and environment, the time may be ripe for doing so. Just would like to maybe get the guys' input on, you know, any new customers that they may have acquired and how much resistance or pushback or lack thereof did they find with achieving and gaining those new customers. Either Ted or Daryl, either one of you guys.
So on my business plan, I don't go for direct customers. I built my business plan on overflow and building great relationship with brokers. So I don't it's a hard line with me because, you know, I haul for Chuck, I haul for Traffic Tech, I haul for C.H. Robinson. Because I haul for so many people and it's just automatic emails with the freight now. We're getting so busy that way. I feel it's conflict of interest for me to go start knocking on a door because how do I know that Chuck's people haven't been there and already started a conversation? How do I know C.H. Robinson's not there? I don't want to get into that competing at my size. What I want to do is provide an awesome service for my brokers, which are my customers, but I excel at running trucks. They excel at selling. Let them sell. Let them take their percentage. They know that I have a rate and I'm not going to move my rate, but they know they're getting their service. So with direct customers, I'm not such a big person on direct customers. I really have found success in what I'm doing, and I just want to multiply it even more.
Well, I mean, let's unpack that a little bit, even a little bit more, Daryl, because a lot of people are just really intimidated with the whole process of the notion of going in and knocking on a door, talking to someone, selling themselves. So how did you approach when you were dealing with brokers, letting them know what it is that you were that fits your criteria, that fits into your business model? Did you sit down and kind of put something together as far as what you wanted them to know and understand, or did you kind of wing it? How did you go about maybe propositioning that and gaining the working relationship to get consistency with those brokers? Because a lot of people, they do a lot of business with brokers, and they may do business with a broker on a consistent basis, but it may not be on a consistent lane.
So I had a little bit of an unfair advantage. I worked for a company called West Air for 17 years straight. And once I was there about a year and a half, I started listening to self-help books and stuff, and I found out relationships are what the key is. So I started developing relationships with all the brokers. I seen the writing on the wall for West Air. I kind of decided to leave. I didn't like the direction that the company was going attitude-wise. And I kind of did something else for 30 days to try flatbed. Wasn't very happy with it or the miles. So I went back to knowing what I did, and I picked the exact same lanes. So I had an inside advantage. I'd already had relationships with a lot of people. I knew who had the freight. What we actually did was I would sit there with the load board, tell my boys who are my dispatchers to book the freight, the rates, you know, that I knew were reasonable, that I could make money at. We booked the freight. I never talked to the person till the third or fourth load when it was delivered on time the way we said we would. And then I called and I reintroduced myself. And as soon as they knew where I was and that I started my own, everything just fell into place. We really work hard at doing what I say we're going to do when we say we're going to do it. And if there's a problem, I don't try to cover it up. I head on the problem. We have a talk with my staff to make sure it doesn't happen again. just be honest. And it's honestly, it just falls in my lap. Once a broker, we deal with people, then they say inside their organization, hey, deal with this guy. Hey, deal with this guy. Deal with this guy. The service sells itself. I just got to try to figure out how to get more trucks and more drivers.
Great position to be in. And Ted, what are you doing?
Hello?
Ted?
Okay, yep, I'm there. What were you asking there, Chuck?
What are you doing to get, like, you brought on new customers. How do you do it?
I write letters. And, like, the beef packer I'm in with, it's a third-generation beef packer. And I've known their story for years. So when I wrote the owner of the billion-dollar, I mean, it's a billion-dollar industry. It's a billion-dollar company. And I just wrote the owner of it a letter and, you know, told him what I wanted or was hoping I could do to service him and let him know I was just here, let him know I'm available. And I told him I would take on his most challenging lanes, his most difficult loads. And I said, I want to take the nuisance out of transportation for you if that's what you're experiencing. And towards the end of the letter, I said, you know, not only 2 minutes of your time, satisfy your curiosity if I can perform. But, you know, we could, you know, just connect and talk and go in a little bit further detail, and it worked. I mean, he picked up the phone and called me, and he said, when could I come in for a meeting? And, you know, he said he got the letter and he was impressed. And he said, no one's ever approached him like that as far as trucking goes. So that's how I got him, just nice short letter.
That's great. That's a real success story using some just an old-fashioned sales method. That people
– Old school method?
You know, sure, yeah. You know what? I've got – well over 140 salespeople that work in our organization, and some of them are top performers. But I bet you there's not three out of 140 that did what you did. So I commend you. That's fantastic. And what about the one you got for the backhaul back into the meat patch? How'd you get that one?
I use LinkedIn, and for those who aren't familiar with LinkedIn, it's a social media that you pay to use, a monthly subscription, and you can type in job titles of individuals who work for certain companies and do searches on them. And when I was headed north out of Nebraska for my Nebraska customer here, I just searched to see who was around that I could service, and found the right job title of the individual and sent them a message, and they called. And they called me on their cell phone at that, and they were on their lunch break because that's how desperate they want. They're not maybe desperate for drivers or carriers, but they're desperate for those who go the extra mile. I mean, it just when you can make somebody go, wow, that's the guy that I want showing up to my customer and being the face of us. Because, you know, us as drivers and carriers, I mean, we're the face of their company when we're delivering their products.
100%. You know, that's so true. So, well, you know what? It sounds like that worked for you both ways. So are you pretty much always going to the same places, the same region?
As far as, like, the customers I picked up, how I've approached it? Or
yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
I've always sent a message, always sent a letter, and it seems to be effective. You know, words are important, and they mean something. So when I write, I just make sure I make it count because you only have one time to make a first impression.
100%.
And it's how we speak and how we're dressed or however, you know, if we're meeting in person. And if those things didn't matter, I always tell people, why does the woman or the guy on their very first date spend all afternoon or all evening getting ready for that first date? Because first impression matters.
100%. You know what? We've talked about it dozens of times on this show about how drivers dress. And, of course, if you're going out to make a if you're going out to make a sales call and meet these people for the first time, whether you're meeting them on the loading dock or you're going to the logistics director's office, you want to look the part. You don't want to look like you just came out of bed or that you've been driving a truck for 3,000 miles. No offense, but the 3,000-mile trip will wear you down pretty quickly. You want to look the part. You don't have to wear a suit, but you have to be dressed. You have to be dressed for the occasion. You really do. Even in your day-to-day job of driving your truck, or even in Daryl's case, your day-to-day job of dealing with your people that work for you, your drivers, owner-operators, your office staff, you can't show up to work, obviously, in a muscle shirt and short pants and slippers. It just doesn't. Most of us can't pull that off. So, you should have to dress like you're coming to work.
One thing that I suggest, think big about your company. Think better about your company for you guys that are out there listening. And it's not very expensive to go out and get you a logo done. If you don't have a logo or something like that, go get you a logo. There are online freelance websites where you can get someone. You can pay as little as $100 to get you an authentic logo created for your company. You have all of the digital information that you got to be able to go take that to a printer or even to a uniform maker and get you some uniforms made up, get you a T-shirt. If you can get you some T-shirts, get you some screen-printed T-shirts with your logo and stuff on it. If you want to dress it up a little bit more than that, you can go get you the professional Dickie-type shirt. If you're out there driving, have your logo embroidered on your shirt, and then you can go up even further than that. Get you a white collar or a polo shirt. Get you a couple of shirts with your.
Yep.
And all of this is tax. All of this is tax deductible. All of this is something, but it shows a little bit of pride in your company. Shows a certain amount of professionalism, and it speaks. You know what I'm saying? One of the things that UPS. And all those guys, they all have a uniform. It's clean, it's neat. It may not be the best looking thing, but at least it's clean and it's neat. And that right there goes a long way into establishing, like Ted was saying, you only get that one chance to make a first impression. And if you can go in there and you look, you don't have to be dressed to the nines. You don't have to be in there suited and booted necessarily. by all means, they understand. If you're driving the truck, they understand you're in the truck. But at least if you can come in there looking clean and looking professional and looking presentable, and you're representing your company, you're keeping your equipment clean, all of these things go into the corporate or the company image that you present, and you want to have a clean. Good image for yourself, and that's why before we have conversations about if you're starting out your company and everything, take a minute to think about the name that you're naming your company. Don't just come up with don't just come up with something all willy nilly about your company name. You may want to come up with something that sounds like you actually put some thought into it. You don't want to go around with stab them and grab them free.
Well, Rico, not just that. Pick something. You're right on the money there, because one of the issues that people are having right now is identity theft, number one. Number two, there are so many names that are similar. You know, like if your name is George and your wife's name is Susan, don't call it G&S or S&G Trucking. Because there's probably 800 S&G Truckings in the United States. And
right.
Some broker is going to send the check for the work you did to the wrong S&G. So don't allow that. Pick a really, really unique name. And, envision yourself one day, 20 or 30 years from now, getting to ring the bell at the New York Stock Exchange because you took your company public, okay? And I'm sorry, but Pete and Susie's Trucking Company are not going to ring any bell at Wall Street, on Wall Street. Okay, so just like Rico said, pick a name, you know, and I think everybody on this show tonight has good, or if not really decent names. I'm happy, you know, and that's probably why we're all here, because we have. I bet you there's not another Crescent Carriers out there, and you know, I'm sure there's not another Elite Special Commodities or another Durinco. I have had some imitators try to steal our name, and we've had a copy written since. But you know, just pick a good, unique name, and you'll be fine, because that name's got to carry you through. Like I said before, you know, when you get a dog, you're only going to have that dog for 10 years, and you try to give him or her a good name. This company may very well outlive you. So for God's sakes, give it a good name. You know, something that people can remember. That's important. And the other thing, Rico, that people may want to do is give out something that people can keep on their desk. It doesn't have to be expensive, but give out something that's a little bit unique. I always used to give out pads of paper back in the days when I did sales calls with our phone number. You know, back in the day when I used to go out and see people in person. I know our late friend George Heck, he had a bunch of giveaways. He had these beautiful clocks that people could put in their office, and with his company name on it, and I think it had his phone number on it. So things like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, and if you...
You got it.
If you take the time to make the investment to get the logos and stuff like that, it's not terribly expensive. It's all a business expense. It's all something that you can write off at the end of the day. But it just goes to show that you're putting some time, some effort, and some thought into growing your company. And you're thinking bigger.
If I could just add to what Rico said earlier about, you know, going the extra step to get a logo and do the shirts with your logo and your company name on it, I think also getting your own email domain, a website, really sets 100%. Yourself apart as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, nobody wants to work with, you know, whatever trucking company at hotmail.com or Gmail. I mean, it just almost
right.
in itself sounds like a scam, because we would never order something offline, you know,
right.
with somebody using those kind of domains, so to speak. So.
Yeah,
and it's very cheap to set your domain name up and to get your email, and to have your branded email. That's something else that is very, very inexpensive. You can go to Google Suites and set it up, and it works and operates just like, because it's on the Gmail platform, but you have your own branded company email, and it definitely comes off much more professional, much more, you know, it just helps with that whole image thing.
And, guys, speaking of images, if I can give you any advice there, if you're going to put pictures of trucks or people, do not use canned pictures. That'll bite you on the backside quicker than anything. I remember, you know, we had done a new brochure, and I had a huge war with the guy about canned pictures. And I won half the battle, but not the other half, that the people that did it. And they insisted on using some canned pictures. And when they came to me with the proof, this canned picture, I went to my office and I got him 10 brochures that had the same picture of the same Freightliner. And I said, this is why I don't want canned pictures. And the guy's mouth dropped. So the other thing is, you know, these guys that build websites for you and you tell them you're in trucking, they're going to give you a photograph, a really nice photograph of some single axle cab over that came from, you know, that's probably domiciled in Sweden or England. It's got a triaxle 53-foot trailer, a 48-foot trailer. Anybody that knows is going to go, that's not even relevant to what we, you know, to the trucks we use. This isn't a very sophisticated company. So spend a few bucks, hire a professional photographer, or even a videographer. You can put a video of your trucks. We did that, and you know what? We got all sorts of great results. You know, and the other thing you can do is take a trailer, one trailer out of your fleet and wrap it. It'll be the best $3,000. You can wrap it any way you want, telling just your company name or telling people you go from point A to point B. I know there's a company up here that advertises for drivers using their 53-foot trailers. And they've done a great job. They haven't done a great job at delivering freight, but they've done a great job in building a lane. And they probably have more trucks going from Southern Ontario to the Toronto area into New York and New Jersey than anybody. They own that lane now. There's all sorts of opportunities that don't have to cost a fortune. Where the heck are you going to get a 53-foot mobile billboard that is going to be everywhere where you run, especially if you only run from point A to point B? It's great for recruitment, and it's great for people recognizing brand awareness. That's so important.
100%. Giving thought to it, like Rico was saying there, and Ted, before you start, is really, really important. And it can also be part of your icebreaker. Like for my company, for example, Durenco stands for Daryl Runs Company. Hi, I'm Daryl. We'll get a chuckle out of it. You just broke the ice,
yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
So I'm looking at the time, gentlemen, and we've blown through it. We all get together. The time just seems to just go by so quickly. So I want to give you guys and gentlemen an opportunity to tell everybody. If they got any questions, or if you want to, you can leave your contact information for us. Give us your social media and all that stuff. And we'll get ready to try to find us a hole to back this baby into until next week.
Ted,
so I'll let you
go.
Okay. So if anybody wants to reach me here at Elite Commodity Express, you can reach out to Ted at ecetruck.com, or you can check out my website, www.ecetruck.com.
There you go.
If anybody wants to reach us at Durenco, you can give us a call, 705-214-9659. Reach out to me at Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, at DurencoSpecialized.com. We have a Facebook page, Durenco Specialized on Facebook. You can get in contact with us there. And even if you need questions on help, I want to be like Chuck and give back. It doesn't have to be a driving job or anything to do with my company. If someone just needs a little bit of help, wants to get into doing what we do, give me a call. I'm here to help people.
That's great. Very generous of you. Thank you.
Chuck, my friend, last but not least.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. If anybody wants to get hold of me, whether to get set up as a carrier, or if you're having some issues in the trucking or brokerage business, I'm always glad to lend a hand to any of our listeners. Give me a call directly. My extension is 203, and the phone number is 800-388-4352. Again, extension 203. Or just send me an email if you prefer. Very easy. It's just Chuck at Traffix, TRAFFIX.com. And if I can do anything to help any of our listeners, I will. I always do.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Well, this has been the Rates and Lanes podcast. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. We definitely enjoy trying to share and impart whatever little bit of knowledge that we can to you guys. We want to thank you for taking time out to join us. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you spent a little time with us, and we are humbled and eternally grateful for you doing so. So with that being said, I want you guys out there to always remember to stay safe, stay healthy. A lot of stuff is going on across the country with violence is picking up with all the different crazy stuff you see in the news all day, every day. So we want you guys out there, stay safe, stay healthy, keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise. God bless you. Good night. God willing, we'll talk to you guys same time, same place next week.
Catch you on the flip-flop.
Good night, gentlemen.
tonight.